variety, culture, and class in America. Live from Long Island's Gold Coast, this is the Melissa Itell Duran Show on Breaking It Down Radio with co-host Frank McKay.
I'd like to welcome everyone to the Melissa Itell Duran Show. Frank McKay here with Renaissance Woman, Melissa Itell Duran. If you go to melissaitelduran.com, you'll get a chance to look at the two documentaries and binge listen to everything that we've been doing on whatever you're listening to now is fine. But if you're not happy here, 106 different outlets or maybe more at this point. Frank McKay here with Melissa. Hey, Melissa.
Hey, Frank. How are you?
I'm doing well. And it looks like President Biden is looking to make a big splash and maybe to get the anti-war people on his side, right? Talking about pulling everybody out of Afghanistan.
Yes, that's right. On the anniversary, no less, of 9/11.
Ah, yeah. No coincidence there. No grandstanding by our president, that's for sure.
No.
Yeah. Well, what's to say? Yeah, they say it's the longest war in the U.S. history, and, you know, whatever that means, but I guess there's still, is there still fighting going on? I mean, pardon my ignorance on this, but is there still fighting going on in Afghanistan, or is it just a kind of a peace troop there?
Yeah, I think they're just keeping, you know, they're holding down the fort at this rate. Now, of course, there are detractors who say that doing this is not going to be good in our interest in the long run, because we may have a reinstallation of some kind of Taliban and whatnot, and other people saying that enough has been enough. And I mean, I don't know. I mean, of all days, why 9/11? Why not another day?
Grandstanding. He's grandstanding.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, listen, it's probably not a bad idea to start getting troops out of places that they're not needed. The whole question is are they needed or not? Are we the ones keeping peace over there? If everyone remembers how terrible, I mean, everyone's so worried about women's rights, and we should be, and we're worried about everything that goes on here. But women's rights in Afghanistan are non-existent under something like the Taliban. They have no rights whatsoever. In fact, I had an interesting conversation with a life coach that concentrated on the Mideast, and this individual is a lady. She had a lot to do with Dubai, and she had a lot of clients in Dubai that were, you know, very wealthy people and everything else. And one of the things that came up, I don't know if I've ever brought this before, but you know, what do you call it? The burqas that the women keep around their face, and they're not allowed to show their faces and all of that. One of the concerns is that maybe they're covering up bruises. Maybe they're covering up scars and you know, effects of beatings that they've gotten from their, you know, from their husbands or from their masters or whatever you want to call it. But that's, you know, it's one of the things in the Arab countries that go. And again, I'm all for tradition, but the burqas is something that I've always I don't want to say I had a problem with, but if that's the reason they're being used and they're insistent on there is to cover up the bruises of the daughters and of the wives, then I think I'm completely against burqas when it comes down to it. But again, that's a whole other story for a whole other time. But if you think about it, if we put something like the Taliban back in, we don't have to put it back in, and it goes in on its own, Biden's going to be looked at as a disaster for pulling the troops out.
Oh, yeah, I agree. I don't know. I start to question all of his foreign policy moves anyway. And, we're facing a real showdown that's coming down the pike from China. And I don't know if this administration is up to it. I know Anthony Blinken made a pretty good effort in Anchorage when he sat face-to-face with his Chinese counterparts, and they were telling the Americans, you know, you look what you guys have done in the name of racism and human rights violations, and who are you to criticize us? But I don't know. You know, I really have my I have my doubts about how just how well this administration can, you know, can finagle its way with China, and because I think we're heading to some kind of showdown with them down the road, and with Russia stockpiling troops at the Ukraine, it's starting to get very worrisome.
Yeah, I agree with you, and I don't think it's conspiratorial or it's it's conspiracy theorist thinking that that we're slipping, and there's a chance that we're not going to be a superpower, and certainly it will be some kind of power. I mean, we're not going away anytime soon, but at one point we were the superpower. We were the only superpower left. The Soviet Union was in shambles, and it turned into a whole bunch of different countries. And that, the unification of Germany, came and went. And I guess it didn't turn out as bad as a lot of people thought it was. I knew an old Slovak woman, and when the 90s, I guess, late 80s, 90s, when Germany unified, she said, "Watch, this is a problem. This is going to be bad, them unifying." And she was a very old lady, and, she remembers what Germany did as a unification. Actually, it didn't turn out so bad. Merkel and Angela Merkel is turning out to be pretty, pretty talented and pretty democratic, right? I mean,
she's a force to be reckoned with,
No doubt.
She's a steady influence. I don't know if she's, she's the successor to the Iron Lady, but, she's pretty good.
I'll tell you, I think we'd be in a lot of trouble without her, to be honest with you.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Because there really aren't a lot of bright spots. It's not an all-star team, and maybe our country included, of leaders out there. And I don't know who they are. I mean, when Vladimir Putin is becoming a force to be reckoned with, you got to be a little nervous there too. But you're right. The idea that Russia and China are both out there and emerging as superpowers. Well, they're as superpowers, basically, is something to be nervous about. Frank McKay here, urging everyone, once again, binge listen to everything that we've been doing here on the Melissa Itell Jorn Show. But think about that. I mean, where do you think we sit at this point? Are we 3 years away? Are we 5 years away? Or does it depend on what Biden does in the next couple of years to see where we are with China? I mean, will China push hard to see what Biden is made of and whether he could stand up?
Oh, I think definitely it's not that far off. I mean, if something
is it happening already?
It is. I mean, there's the risk of Taiwan being overtaken, overwhelmed with China. That's very much in the picture. I wouldn't be surprised if things start heating up in the middle of this decade. And who knows? In 10 years, we may be embroiled in some kind of war. And I hate to imagine what kind of war that might be.
Yeah. Albert Einstein had a great quote, and I'm paraphrasing. He said, World War III, he doesn't know what World War III will be fought with, what weapons will be fought with, but he guarantees that World War IV will be fought with sticks and rocks.
Yeah, I think he said that, he knows how World War III will be started. But he doesn't know he'll get started, but he doesn't know how, he's pretty sure World War IV, if there is such a thing, the next world war would be with sticks and stones,
right?
Like caveman times. Yeah, that's exactly what he said,
And he might be right.
We've been, at least when we had the original Soviet Union, at least we knew that the weapons were in, I think they were in the hands of logical people. The Soviets, for everything they did, at least they knew what they had. They didn't want to start a war any more than we did. Nobody, you know, most people worried about themselves. They don't want to see themselves blow up. So we went through 40, 45 years of this. But at least we knew that the people behind it were, I think, rational human beings. And now we don't know. I mean, first we went into the hands of terrorists. We were very fortunate on 9/11 that these Saudi suicide bombers didn't have their hands on a miniature dirty bomb, small-scale nuclear weapon, because the stakes would have been even worse.
We might not even be here if that was the case.
Manhattan might not have been there at all. We might have survived. But
well, we're not too far from Manhattan, and think about what could have been there, right? Yeah. I mean, if there was a dirty bomb, if there was some kind of nuclear bomb there, and who knows what they're coming up with now.
Right.
Amazing.
Yeah. Well, they were talking about suitcase bombs about 20 years ago. So now it's anything. We don't know who's in the hands. Where these things, these devices are in the hands of what kinds of people. I think if God forbid there were a small scale nuclear attack, or it was set off by a fringe group, let's say in Manhattan. And we're not talking about how many kilotons are these bombs these days? 100 or something?
Yeah, something like that.
Let's say it was just a miniature one, you would make in your home lab or something for a science project. Okay, we could survive that, I think. I would, unfortunately, anybody near the epicenter would probably not do too well. But even if they were to drop a big one, it would have this, in the nightmare scenario, the day after scenario. If anybody remembers that movie, you can watch that.
Yeah,
I think you can watch that on Amazon. I don't know. I saw
somewhere.
Recently in, yeah. I saw that on one of the streaming services. You can watch some of the old '80s nuclear war movies. If you have nothing better to do, and you're bored out of your mind, and you just finished watching Godzilla versus King Kong, which I love, by the way, because I'm a big Godzilla fan.
Oh, me too. I'm a big Godzilla fan.
Yeah, I love him. I love him.
Yeah.
But if you want, you need something else, and you're just, you're streamed out, you could, watch one of those '80s nuclear war movies, and then you'll have nightmares all night. Conceivably, if you're really far away, maybe 50 miles away from the center of it all, you can survive the blast. How long you'll live after that, that's another question.
Yeah, well, good point. By the way, Godzilla, I love the original Godzillas.
Me too.
Oh my God, I'm a sucker for them. I love the Japanese Godzilla. Yeah, no question about it. But anyway, that's interesting. So you saw Godzilla versus King Kong?
Yes.
And what do you think?
Oh, I saw it on HBO Max. They really didn't need the human actors. They didn't really add too much to that. It's a pyrotechnic show between these two, and it does play out very well on the big screen. I watched it on my phone, so but it's an interesting concept. Yes, there are pitfalls in the plots. In case somebody hasn't yet watched it, it's HBO Max is keeping it on for another few weeks, and then by the end of the month it goes off. You'd have to rent it. So and you can join HBO Max. I think they give you a trial period. So if you don't, once you see the movie, if you don't want to do anything else with HBO Max, I think you can not go ahead with the next month, which you would have to pay for. But I still have a sweet spot for the old Toho Studio Godzilla movie.
Yeah,
and
me too.
Of course, and the original 1962 King Kong versus Godzilla, which I loved.
I saw a replay of that in a drive-in, which was great.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
How was that on the big screen?
Just great. Anything Godzilla on the big screen like that is just incredible.
Yeah.
I loved it. But go ahead. I cut you off. I'm sorry.
No, not at all. No, I'm glad that we both, we share this enthusiasm for the old-time Godzilla movies. But getting back to the big one, the new one, this is the woke answer to Godzilla. He doesn't look the same. He doesn't even roar the same way he did in the old movies, And, you know, they, I think they were trying to favor him. I'm not sure. I may be, you know, spinning a yarn or two. because
you're biased.
I'm biased, right? They made they had him come out as a, you know, this beady-eyed big monster who had been, you know, who's battle scarred, and you know, Kong is kind of like a sore loser, and you know, Godzilla knows when things are over, he walks away. I mean, they make him more into the guy who says, you know, it's finished already, buddy. I'm out of here.
Yeah. Yeah, that's well. You know, one of the things, and we're talking about films here, and films while we're still in a pandemic. Keep in mind, again, Frank McKay here with Melissa Itell Jern. There's an unusual year coming up, or you know, a couple weeks coming up with the Oscars, and we have to see what is going to happen with the Oscars. It was a much different situation. The obvious big event movies that we've grown to know and love and expect to see at the Academy Awards, a lot of them were held back. I think West Side Story, right? Wasn't Spielberg doing a West Side Story and you know, remake of that? And he held it back specifically.
Yeah.
And you would think that this would be one that would do very well at the Oscars. And they bypassed that. They bypassed that because they didn't want to take a bath. And
Godzilla and King Kong were supposed to be released last year. Last summer or something like that. Of course, because of the pandemic, they kept pushing back the release date until now. They decided, well, we're going to show it on HBO Max, and we'll also have it in limited release in theaters. So if there is a theater near you that's open, it may be featuring Godzilla. There are some theaters here and there. If you wish to go to a theater, if you feel comfortable sitting in a theater, you can, you know, I haven't been to a theater in a long time.
Same here. And I used to go constantly. I used to go with the kids constantly, friends and whatever. But I've stayed away from theaters since the pandemic hit. And, you know, I could just imagine somebody sitting next to me trying to put that popcorn near me or something. You know, I stayed away from all of that. One of the things that that I heard yesterday, I heard a statistic that not only do we have no billion-dollar grosses in all of this, but we also have probably no $10 million grosses, right? I mean, what is a blockbuster? There has been no blockbusters this year, in the past calendar year, due to the pandemic. But I think 6 million, is that possible? 6 million is the biggest number that we have for a movie this year.
Really?
Is that unbelievable? Did I hear that right? I thought it was NPR gave that statistic. But have you heard any statistics on this?
No, I haven't heard the latest. No.
I mean, what is the blockbuster hit of the year? If you think about it, I can't think of anything.
I can't either. I can't.
You know.
I don't know.
You know what I did during the pandemic, and I'm still finishing it up because I've done it, you know, I got started a little late on it, but I've done this in the past. I've watched every Best Picture in creation from Wings, 1927. It was the only silent up until The Artist in 2012. That was a silent film that won an Academy Award. So I rewatched everything that I hadn't seen in a long time. You know, I didn't go back and watch Forrest Gump for the 10th time or anything like that. But I went and I watched, like, for example, Gentleman's Agreement. Do you know that film?
Oh, it's a classic, yes, with Gregory Peck.
Great, and an important film, too. They were talking about anti-Semitism before anybody really was. And,
he was a terrific actor. And
boy, he was great.
Yeah.
You know, and then the other one that I was impressed with was, and by the way, before I forget my thought, so I went back to watch everything there. I got four left out of the 93. And, you know, and again, some I didn't rewatch. I didn't rewatch Rocky for the 10th time or, you know, things like that. But I rewatched everything that I haven't seen in a long time. And then I did the AFI, that's the American Film Institute's 100 Greatest Movies. And again, I didn't rewatch, you know, things that I've seen 10 times or whatever. And there was some, you know, crossovers on that, you know, several crossovers on that, and, you know, Casablanca and things like that. But there were a lot of great films. So altogether, you know, somewhere in the neighborhood of whatever, 180 films, if you put the 100 and the 93 together, minus the crossovers. And it's really an education to do that, to go back and do that. Wow. And I figured while I was stuck in captivity, so to speak, I just put it on in the background, and I multitasked to a lot of things. And I don't know what's going to win the Academy Award this year, Melissa. What's the best picture this year? Last year was Parasite. Oh.
Parasite, right. Oh, and I'm wondering, do you know how are they going to pull this off? Are they having a full costumed spectacle?
I don't think so. I don't think they would do that just for the I don't think they would do that for the reason of optics.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think
they
want to be criticized.
That for the other awards, you know, the Critics Awards, have they done the Directors Award yet?
No, the Screen Actors Guild.
Yeah,
and, no, I don't know. I haven't been up on any of that, to be honest with you. And
we've been busy with other things. It's a peculiar year. So.
Yeah, but as far as you know, have they had a big crowd at any of these places?
I don't know, but I think they did have at the Golden Globes. They did have some tables, some socially distant tables, and then they had some nominees who were dressed up at home. And of course, these people have, you know, they have, you know, McMansions, so they can film them outside of their pool, at their Olympic-sized pool, or their, you know, or in their spacious home theater, which, you know, some of us don't have an Olympic-sized pool or or big, you know, or a home theater the size of a multiplex. So, you know, we can't do that, but they can.
Yeah. Right, they can. Yeah, they're doing better at home than most people are doing at luxury hotels and things like that.
Exactly.
You know, kind of a funny thing. A couple years ago, I think it was Sean Penn gave a big speech about putting up a wall and keeping people out. And I know we've touched on this before, but they showed the day after they showed Sean Penn's house, and it had everything but a moat with crocodiles around it. You know, I mean, he had a wall.
Yeah.
He had a wall as gigantic as you can. You know, you couldn't get in there if you were a trick or treater if you wanted to. And
about trick or treating there. Nobody's going to answer the doorbell.
Yeah, and you know, if you do, you might get your little face smashed. You know, by Sean Penn. You know, didn't he break cameras of photographers and things like that? You know, he was.
Yeah.
He got a little crazed when he had Madonna on his arm, and that was a pretty ugly scene. Often, again, Frank McKay here, urging everyone to go to MelissaEiteljuren.com and watch the documentaries, but also binge listen to everything that we've been doing. Again, Frank here with Melissa. Melissa, the thought on that, right? We might not get to see all the hypocrisy this year. Usually, they like to politicize it. I imagine, if anything, it'll be maybe there'll be some anti-police theme. I mean, what do you think? What goes on with these speeches? They're going to use
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's always going to be some politicism there. I mean, they can't avoid that. They just can't go one night without making an awards show into a political arena, a political, you know, microcosm. They just can't do what they're best at, entertain.
Right.
You know, so they're going to make something out of it. I'm sure they're going to mention police brutality and racism and a host of other things, and you know, maybe they'll make a buffoon out of Ted Cruz, you know, and some of his other Republican cronies. I mean, it's no doubt it's going to be politicized. It always is.
And it's going to be biased, left biased, for
sure. Right. Right. I mean, you know, some of us, that's why many of us just don't tune in. You know, the shows were in the past, they were always overwrought, long, boring. Now, I know there are categories that are not as glamorous as Best Actress, Best Actor, you know, like Best Set Design or Best Graphic whatever. And I mean, those people work hard. That's true. And then Best Costume Design, that's, you know, those are important categories, but they don't get enough attention. And there are some awards that in the past were always given outside the parameters of the prescribed time frame for the show. And they would show clips of that and whatnot. And then the speeches. I mean, okay, you got your award. Wonderful. You don't have to start, you know, talking about, you know, give a political, you know, lecture about how the world should be. And then you go home in your limousine to your, you know, your $14 million home, you know, when you live next to Harry and Meghan. I mean, you know, I mean, yes, I know free speech, but in appropriate places, there is a time and place for political pontification, but it's going to happen. I mean, expect it. I mean, maybe it will be a little bit less severe this year because they don't have Trump to kick around anymore.
Right. Yeah, he's in the background. I wonder if, his name will make an appearance somehow. They'll beat him up somehow. He's too popular to beat up just forget about. But let me ask you something. The last time we spoke, Prince Philip had just passed away. Have we had the funeral? And pardon my ignorance. I haven't followed it at all. Has the funeral come and gone?
Yeah, I mean, I don't, you know, for us in the United States, it's not as big as it is for people in Britain. So I think a lot of people are not exactly paying attention to every minute of going on over there in preparation for the funeral procession. So a lot of us are not paying attention to it. But yes, the funeral is tomorrow.
Oh.
Only 30 people, only 30, I guess, members of the royal family, including Philip's blood relatives. And he's got some foreign relatives who are, you know, I guess they're just nominal heads. They have nominal state titles. You know, they're from different countries, so they're included. Only 30 people because this has to be a socially distanced funeral. It's not a state funeral. And even if things were better, he didn't want a state funeral. He wouldn't have wanted one. He wanted, a low key funeral.
Yeah.
So only 30 members of the royal family are invited, including Harry. And I guess to make Harry feel good, the Queen asked that no one wear a military outfit because he's not, you know, he lost his military standing when he shipped out to Montecito.
Oh, and I'm sure they've talked to him about not wearing his Hitler costume.
Yes, he cannot wear the Nazi armband. Yes, leave the SS, you know, uniform in the vault somewhere or in the garbage.
Yeah. How old was he when he did that? I make the joke all the time.
Yeah.
You know, when Prince Harry comes up, you know, he never shakes it, at least with me. And he's done, you know, a lot, you know, since then. I guess he shouldn't. But how old was he when he did that?
I think he was only in his 20s.
Yeah, well, only in his 20s. I mean, I would have known when I was 12 that Nazism wasn't funny. You know, wasn't...
It's not cool. It's not cool to go to a costume party or whatever. I don't know if it was Halloween. I'm not sure. And dressed up as a Nazi.
Yeah,
okay?
Right.
Well, you want to make a statement. Go as Thor or...
Right. Go as a Nazi killer. Go as a Nazi killer. You can get away with that.
Right, right. Go, yeah. Yeah, go as, dress up as Brad Pitt in the movie. Do that, but don't, you know, put on a Nazi armband and think it's cool while you're smoking a cigarette and you're acting like a jerk.
Right. Right, something like that. Well, going back to the best pictures, one movie that I didn't look forward to seeing, but after I saw it, I remembered how excellent it was. It was with Greer Garson and Walter Pigeon, Mrs. Miniver. If you remember.
Oh,
that.
Yes, that is a classic. I don't know if a lot of people even know who these fine actors were. I mean, these were back in
terrific.
The 40s. You had terrific. You had stupendous acting, and these actors made less money than they make now. You know, they were real actors. They were talents. I mean, this wasn't just about, you know, putting your video on or being a Kardashian and just being famous for nothing. I mean, they had to act. They had to know how to act. These were very classically trained, well-trained actors. You had Laurence Olivier and yes, Walter Pidgeon was one of the big names, and Greer Garson.
Yeah.
So these were, you know, these were titans of the MGM days and the studio days. These were fine actors, and thank God we have a TCM. We have the Turner Classic Movie Channel, and there are a lot of fans, people who grew up with movies like those, or people who appreciate, who are real film buffs, and they're preserved, you know, forever. And you know, that's great acting.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it, and I just you know, I'm very. You know, very, very impressed with some of the old time acting, and you know, you mentioned TCM. If you watch something on TCM now, and I guess they have to do this, but they give the politically correct speech in the beginning. You've seen this, right?
Mm-hmm.
Have we talked about this? You know, where they you know, they had for example, when they played Breakfast at Tiffany's, they had a big discussion about how it wasn't funny that Mickey Rooney played a Japanese man as a caricature.
Yes, and he, you know, with the buck teeth and the exaggerated Asian
glasses,
accent.
Yes.
In those days, people called Asians Orientals.
Right.
Yeah, which you don't do today.
No.
Now, of course, there is Oriental furniture, but you don't
right.
describe your friend. He's an Oriental. No.
Right.
You can't do that today. So yeah, I know they have to do the grand speech, the disclaimer, so that people who are watching TCM are acutely attuned to these things are not offended. But that was, you know, I hope they don't think that the cancel culture thinks, oh, we've got to cancel Breakfast at Tiffany's.
Yeah,
we have
that
to
would
cancel
be ridiculous.
Audrey Hepburn. We have to cancel Mickey Rooney.
Yeah, terrible. Yeah, they can't do it. Look, I watched one of the most racist films recently that you could ever imagine called Cimarron. And Cimarron was, I think, 1930. They took the best picture back, and it was a Western, and it was, you know, story about Oklahoma and whatever. And they brought, actually one of the, little rascals, Farina's older brother, as a, I don't know if he was a slave or if he was a freed slave or, well, probably a slave. And they brought him, and they had him saying the most outlandish, racist, stereotypical things. But I thought to myself, I hope they never take this out. This is how Hollywood was back then, and this is how how they behaved and how they treated African Americans. And I think that's an important part of our history. It's not a proud part of our history by any means. It's shameful. Yeah, there's no question about it. But
I mean, Gone with the Wind.
Yeah. Oh, Mammy and Butterfly McQueen and Hattie McDonald. You know, I mean, all of that. I mean, that was very important historically because, and again, terrible depictions of how you know, how African Americans were. But let's face it, I mean, this is how we viewed it. This is how Margaret Mitchell wrote about them, and them meaning slaves and people of that time period, and you know, debutantes like Scarlett O'Hara and swashbucklers or whatever you want to call them, like Rhett Butler. You know, this is how they saw it and how it was glorified. Gone with the Wind, I don't care how inappropriate some scenes are. It's one of the great movies of all time. I mean, without question.
I don't know if it's been voted as a Smithsonian National Treasure or classic, but it's up there. I mean, it's in the pantheons of movie history in our country, and I think it needs to be studied, needs to be around, so we know the mentality of people of back in the 30s. I mean, it's important when you do, you know, historical analysis, when you're taking into account what people were thinking, why we didn't act the way we should have acted, why didn't we, you know, bomb the train tracks to Auschwitz? Well, why did we have such, you know, because that's the way people thought, that it was no state of Israel, and Jews were not a priority on the minds of many people in Washington.
Yeah, I mean, the Jewish people were depicted in such a terrible way in so many films and everything else. And you're a proud Jew, and I'm certainly a Zionist, and you're not saying let's take away Merchant of Venice, right? You know, where Shylock was a disgraceful character.
Shakespeare. Shakespeare's still very popular.
Yeah.
And he wrote about a Jewish character the way he knew. The way, that was his perception. That was the perception of Jews back then.
Yeah.
In the 16th century.
Yeah, and amazing. Amazing. And again, we are in a culture here. Again, look, we started out talking about America and possibly, you know, coming up against China, and you know, you're right. I mean, it's something that could happen by the end of this decade, by mid-decade, and I guess depending on how President Biden handles it, you know, we could be looking at a real showdown. We could be looking at a showdown in Russia, involving Russia, and I don't know, like, if our cancel culture, if our political correctness, if all of this is somehow going to weaken us. And again, I'm all for, improving the way we treat each other, you know, in general. Certainly you and I both agreed that the Me Too movement had wonderful things happen because of it. You know, like it got bad people off, off the stage, off the street. But then there are some, you know, people who, you know, maybe would argue that it went too far. And now, you know, there's just an accusation made and the person is completely finished just because of an accusation, and you don't know what's true and what's not true and everything else. But I wonder if our cancel culture is going to weaken us to be able to fight China or to debate the argument with China, or will that be considered racist? I mean, do you think the two are interchangeable? Do you think there's a chance that because of what we're doing, it's lessening our chance of being a superpower in any way, or is that just an overreaction on my part?
No, I don't think it's an overreaction. I think it's a grim reality. It's a very possible result of the direction we're going into, and we can't ignore the trajectory of China. I think we've seen this. This has been staring us in the face for quite some time. And how we choose to deal with our foreign powers, our foreign counterparts, is going to determine what happens with us. I mean, China's not going away. They're only going to get more and more ambitious. Yeah. And their allies are Russia, and they've got Iran. What we're doing with Iran, I worry about, because they pose a very big threat to Israel, and Israel is on this. Israel's not going to let anything, get past them. But it's very possible we could see conflict breaking out in the Middle East, and if China goes through on its evident or its implied threat, and it's implied, they haven't said they're doing it, but their actions say so, of storming Taiwan, things are going to take a serious turn, I believe, and unless Biden wants to just stand by and watch, I don't know. But I'm worried about Iran. I don't think you can trust Iran, and they will always be a threat to Israel. I think it's a mistake to have gone back with them on this agreement. But
I think it's a big mistake. It's the thing that I'm most upset about with Biden, to be honest with you. I mean, I didn't vote for him. I can't say that I'm, a big fan of his, neither did I vote for Trump, right? So I voted for someone who had no chance in the world of winning, right, as I usually do. But the one thing that really bothers me about Biden is this deal with Iran. I think it's a terrible deal. I thought it was a terrible deal when Obama made it, and I think it's terrible, twice as terrible to go back to it.
Yeah, I agree.
Well,
this is what they ran on. They ran on that platform.
Yeah, I mean, let's see how it all turns out. I've said this for my whole life, and I guess, maybe I picked up on what my parents felt, but Israel is our only true friend in the Mideast, and it is the best friend that we've ever had. Maybe you want to make an argument that the UK, Great Britain, and Israel, but we protect our friends at all costs. If we ever lose Israel or ever weaken Israel, do anything to weaken Israel, which I hope we didn't just do with this Iranian deal, but if we ever lose Israel, the Mideast is just finished. I mean, you'll never be able to have a handle on it. And I mean, I don't know if you agree or not, but I mean, at all costs, you keep Israel.
I know. I agree definitely. And they're tough. They're not. They're ahead of the game. They know what's going on in Iran. They're keeping tabs on them. They've got a terrific, you know, intelligence source, and but they're not, you know, they're not afraid of anyone, and they will not, you know, cower in the face of an attack. And but we can't be the doormat to Iran.
Nope. Under no circumstances. Well, listen, we started out talking about us as a superpower and us coming to a showdown with China. We got into some Academy Awards and some cancel culture, but let's close with what we started with, China. I mean, how big an issue could we have with China? I mean, they have a tremendous amount of people. They have over a billion people. Their idea of, and this is the Chinese government, I'm saying, I don't want to oversimplify anything, but the Chinese government's view of people are what most people view cattle as, or whatever. I mean, the human rights bug has not hit the Chinese government in any way. I think people, and again, correct me if I'm wrong, but the government of China see their people as peasants and as the proletariat, and they do not relish these people, and I think they'd have no problem sending a bunch of them out there as cannon fodder if they needed to. Again, I don't know that's the type of war we're going to be fighting anymore, but it is a little scary. I just comment on that in closing, if you would. Am I way off base, or is that how the Chinese government see their people?
Well, I think, you know, I know some people would say, oh, the Chinese don't want to harm their own people. I don't know about that. I mean, they located, they established I call it a bioterrorist lab. I know it's a laboratory. It's a biological biotechnical lab in Wuhan where I think something went amiss.
Yep.
And the COVID-19 bug got out because of somebody's mistake. They were developing it. Anthony Fauci knew about it, and all the officials at NSA knew what was going on. Of course they know. They all have, they're keeping tabs on what the other side is doing. I don't trust China, the government. I think they would definitely, they might throw their people under the bus. They have. I mean, look, they're conducting a genocide of a segment of their population who happen to be from Turkish nationalism. It's a genocide. It's their version of the final solution, and yeah. It's there. There are pictures. There, I don't know what.
It's a fact. It's not even opinion. I mean, it's proof. There's proof all over the place that they're doing this.
Right. And of course, when you talk to them about it, they say it's an eternal matter.
Yeah.
Well, of course, no, they're not afraid of Biden. I mean, Anthony Blinken may be trying his best. I don't personally. I miss Mike Pompeo because I thought he was a terrific Secretary of State. I don't know if he's going to run for president. I'm not sure if that's his next career move. He may want to. I don't know. It's going to be a crowded field in 2024, but I just don't know if Anthony Blinken can pull it off. I mean, he called them out. He called out China at that Anchorage meeting, but China's, China just they turn the tables and say, look at yourselves. We're dealing with our, it's an internal matter. It's our business. Look what you did to the American black. Look what you did to the American Indian.
Yep.
Who are you to say anything?
Yeah, so and they have they have a point. Although that was a long time ago, but Blinken at least brought it up. Heidi. At least brought it up. I don't know how seriously they took it. They I think they yawned and kind of walked away and gave us a couple of shots and went from there. But Melissa, we'll be talking about this a lot in the future, I'm sure. And I'm sure you'd join with me in thanking everyone for tuning in each and every week.
Yes, we're deeply, deeply gratified and grateful. And from the we appreciate you from the bottom of our hearts that you listen so faithfully every week.
And everybody stay safe. And you too, Melissa. Thank you very much.
Thank you. All right. Thanks, Frank. And thanks to everyone out there.
And please, everyone out there, stay safe. Keep the masks on. Get the vaccines. Frank McKay signing off. We'll see you all next time on the Melissa Itell Jorn Show.
You've been listening to Melissa Itell-Duren and co-host Frank McKay on Breaking It Down Radio.